Hey ladies, check this out.
What is that? Holy! Why is it so big?
It's gigantic, right?
That's huge!
It's gigantic, I know.
You like
Holy,
that?
Why is that so huge?
It's too big for you to handle, yes.
Welcome to the Soxcast, the future of disappointment. This is episode 177. It's coming straight at them precious little ear holes of yours. And before we get started, you guys already know it's getting to be that time. You know it. You can feel it. It's in the air. The excitement, the electric is already happening. I've had a number of people already message me and asking. That's right.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. The year's winding down and things are spinning up. And we're just giving you a little heads up here to let you know that we will be announcing the Game of the Year 2025 submissions the first week of November. So that'll be on the site. It'll go out as an audio podcast on the feed, and we'll be going over the details proper the next time we're together. So if you're even vaguely tuned into us somehow, like you'll know it's live. So get them list making brains ready, people. It's down to the wire. It's going to be the most contentious year ever, I imagine.
Absolutely. We always bicker a lot about.
We bicker. We throw chairs. So yep. Much drywall has to be replaced after every one of those episodes. It's really
we all
ridiculous.
Argue about what like the official game of the year for SMPS should be, because we all have like because we always do like okay, I'm trying to spin this into a joke about us doing like an official game of the year podcast where we actually talk about games that come out this year and we like pick one instead of us just making a list of like 10 completely unrelated games.
Right. But yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting. We're all as jazzed for it as you are. I've still got one more game coming out this year that I want to play that I think may sneak in.
Excellent.
So we will see.
At the buzzer in November.
It, literally right at the buzzer. It's coming out this week, and I'm very excited for it. So, but yeah, we'll be going over all that stuff starting next time we're together. So how's everybody doing? We all loose. We all loosey goosey. We're doing this one on a Sunday evening, and this is like old.
Yeah.
This is like old episode energy. This is like, oh yeah, we are just all kind of in for the night.
God, we did used to do it Sunday evening.
We used to do Sunday evenings, and that's like literally the end of your weekend. So you spend the whole damn weekend being like, I got a podcast to do. It's like having a doctor's appointment at 3:30.
Absolutely, that's how I always feel about it. So, long-time listeners here for the last few episodes may know that I've been in my coffee era. So I've been drinking a big old oat milk latte right before the episodes. Yeah. And my body is not used to that. So it's like a big blast. And I've been really coming in hot.
Oh!
This time I tried something different. I took a nap for an hour.
Yeah.
And woke up immediately before the episode.
Is it one of those good naps where you feel rested, or you were like, I don't know that I should have done that?
Well, I don't believe in bad naps. I believe all naps are going to be good for me ultimately, but
a late nap is good eventually.
I feel, you know, I still feel woozy right. now, yeah. even if my, so this is going to be kind of like our NPR episode from John. It's going to be kind of a, hey everyone.
Good evening and welcome.
Good evening.
To Soxcast welcome. Theater. To my immediate virtual right, he'll rip your face off and wipe his ass with it. It's Rhett.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely the energy I bring all the time. I know it.
Don't know a single person that's not intimidated by little old Rhett over there. Our goodest boy.
Most intimidating.
The
of all
most
time.
Intimidating. Most intimidating.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah. But you're here for the Sunday vibes. You're here. We're ready to roll this thing. I think we're excited. Well,
for me.
Yeah.
For me, at least, it's not usually the end of my weekend because I stay up till 5
p.m.
My day's kind of still starting.
Yeah. You've got a good 12 hours in you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, you're probably the one with the highest amount of energy. Like, I have been incredibly busy over the last couple of weeks, and I'm blah, blah, blah. But we're going to do it, man. We're going to roll through. To my immediate virtual left, he's married.
Oh, that's true.
It's on fire.
Yep.
Yeah, you did the thing. Good job. Congratulations. Now you can shut up about it.
Feels good.
All right. So then we got your coffee in you. You got your nap. Everybody's feeling good.
I got my marriage energy.
Yeah, you got your marriage energy. Yeah.
New wife guy energy.
I'm going to be using that content emote for the next 2 years and going to love it. Going to love it.
Yep. Yep. Pure joy.
We're absolutely, everybody's happy for you. And I think, you know, like the server lit up pretty big, I think.
It was really cute. It was really sweet.
Well, everyone was really also nice John's birthday for
and
a week.
And it was also, yeah, John just gets a fucking birthday week, I guess.
Beam, beam, content emoji, content emoji.
Always works out for the straight white guy.
I'm not straight. I know that much.
All right, so let's get into things, Rhett.
Oh, we're starting with me.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah, check it out. Heads up. Heads up, bitch.
Oh, boy.
On the ball. Let's go. You got the most energy. You got to get us awake.
Do I? Oh, geez, if I'm high energy one today, that's
you gotta
a little scary.
You've got to excite us.
Oh, no.
Pull us in.
Okay, so I had a little story to start with. So speaking of Game of the Year, so I think John was hinting towards, like, the community, like, whatever gets the most votes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the community winner of each year. And yeah. I was thinking, so what's that going to be for us, huh? And this, I'm having this thought to myself Friday night driving to Domino's Pizza. Mm-hmm. It was right after you had messaged me about it, like, hey, we're going to announce it and stuff. So Game of the Year is on my mind. And I think, well, I think in our community specifically, it's not going to be Expedition 33.
Yeah.
Even though literally every other website is going to be mentioning in it.
I think we will get a good hand. Yeah,
there will be some for sure. Yeah. It's not like a total no show, but we three haven't played it.
No,
that's true. Know?
So I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, so if it's not that, there was some other game that I think is going to be a clear favorite. It's just escaping my mind. Yeah. So anyways, I walk into the Domino's Pizza, and they have a chalkboard on the left. And usually it has things written on it, like manager special and like maybe some doodles by kids. This week, there's a chalk drawing of Hornet and the Knight from Silksong. And I go, oh,
what in the world? What in the world? Why didn't you take a picture of that? That would have been fun.
I'm too shy, and I was at that. By the time I noticed it, I was also holding the pizza, so I'm just like, oh.
You can't pizza and picture at the same time. That's literally against the law. That's against the law.
And, like, the employees had already started talking to each other, because I was going to be like, oh, my God, Silksong.
Yeah, yeah.
But just seeing it out in the wild like that while I'm specifically thinking about Game of the Year was freaking weird.
Like, that's like, very funny. Oh,
shit's gone mainstream, huh?
Silksong behind you with a knife following you around. You start seeing signs.
There are hornets everywhere, but those with the eyes to see.
You like that joke?
That's real good. I just
couldn't believe running into the wild for the first time ever.
That's crazy. Yeah,
that's really funny because I opened up Backlogged and looked at release year 2025.
Oh, yeah.
By popularity. Number one, Expedition 33. Number two, Silksong.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of the one.
Number three, Deltarune. Not a finished game.
Not a finished game, yeah.
But also, I'm not sure how many people in our community played it.
Yeah, it was weirdly quiet around that game.
Yeah.
I know some people did.
It's definitely huge.
Yeah.
It's definitely huge.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know about, like, our community.
Yeah.
Silksong, I think Silksong broke the internet for a week.
But Silksong brought down every gaming platform.
All of them at once.
I know.
So, yeah.
Oh, God. Okay, the three I don't recognize from, like, the top 15 are Peak, Repo, and Split Fiction, and they are all online co-op games.
Those first two are streamer bait.
Yeah, I mean, Friendslop.
Peak and Repo are literally the ones that Friendslop was invented
Friendslop.
For.
There's.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Split Fiction is from, they've done other co-op games. Mm-hmm. Oh, I forget the name.
Oh, It Takes Two and a Way.
I've heard of these. Yeah, that's kind of actually a AAA
one. That's their pedigree. Oof. They've been doing that for years, so.
From the creators of Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons?
Your favorite.
Oh my God, I just was Googling these guys the other day and saw that they had, like, No, no, wait. It was the Limbo guy had, the Limbo people had like a big falling out, and there's like a lawsuit now about it. I don't know about the Starbreeze, but oh, economic problems and restructuring 2018 to present. Okay, Starbreeze seems rough.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not.
It's very distant to what we're actually talking about.
Sure, sure. Well, yeah, I think the creators' brothers are at a different studio working on these new games.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So this is not the same studio, but it's similar, some content creative overlap, and I don't care about any of it. So
anyway, so yeah. It's so fun when we talk about like the AAA scene and just none of us have any idea really.
Monster Hunter Wilds came out this year.
I know this list. Right. The more you go, it's like, did anybody play any of these?
I am so divorced from. We are so hipster and divorced.
Everybody played Blueprints. Tons of people played Blueprints and then just played it, and everyone was like, for like the week after it came out, they were like, oh my god, this is amazing, this is so good. And then like 2 or 3 months later, I hear people that are like, boy, I'm really getting tired of playing Blueprints.
Roguelike maybe puzzle game. Probably not a great idea.
Probably seems like the worst possible premise for a thing, but you know, I guess other people are having fun. Seems like the most John Poison thing possible.
God,
but I guess people are having fun. Ugh, God, bad.
We're getting the spicy takes out before game of the year.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Just so you know, what you won't be hearing
on your
about.
List. Yeah, go right ahead.
We won't. Yeah, I mean, go for it. People I trust liked Blueprints. That was like. Do we have to play every 100-hour puzzle game that comes out?
John, you don't even play 100-hour puzzle game that comes out. I think this is the only actual 100-hour one. Void Stranger's not that long.
Void Stranger's only like 60 hours.
Yeah, it's only like 50 to 60. It depends on how smart you are.
Yeah, great. So 100 hours for me, because I'm a big dummy. All right, whatever.
Anyways, I feel like resetting.
We'll see where the chips fall.
Yep. So, Rhett, what you been up to?
anyways, game of the year. I'm scared now because, you know, I've been playing a lot of long games, and usually it's like one a month.
Yeah.
And, you know, you end up with 10 at the end of the year, and you go, okay, here are the 10 games I played. this time, I played 3 bangers.
Ooh.
So now I'm like, looking at my list and going, uh-oh, this is going to be real tight. The fucking sink there.
Yep.
Beautiful. So I played the RPG remake of a beloved classic. You know, I figured it was going to come up on this podcast eventually because everyone was super hyped for this. I played Witchspring R.
Yes. Tell me about this.
So I haven't played the original. It's a phone game that John played and didn't then like barely remembers anything about.
Yeah. I loved Witchspring 3. That was my big, and then I played 1 and 2 and had a good time, but I really loved 3. It sounds like this is a very different, this is a very expanded,
it's very different thing. From 1 at least.
Yes.
Even like I was trying to like piece together how these games went. Have you played Witchspring 4?
I haven't played 4 yet. I have it on my phone. I wanted to play it at the time. And then that was the first time I noticed that the new iOS update makes it so that you have a bar at the bottom of the screen at all times that you can't dispel. And I was so mad about it. I didn't play Witchspring 4.
I get it, though.
Yeah. But I figured out a way around that. You have to activate like parent lock mode and then it hides the bar. So I did that with a few games. But at a certain point, I was like, this steep stops me from changing the volume or taking screenshots, and it's really annoying. So then I just started dealing with the bar. So that's been my arc with iPhone gaming.
They disabled full screen. That's dire.
It's not, I don't like, phone gaming's gotten rough. All right, continue.
So opening hour of this game is interesting because you can kind of feel the mobile game. Technically it's a mobile game. I'm not even using that derogatory, but the story is extremely, extremely loose at the start, where you play as this witch named Pieberry, and she wants to collect pies, and she hunts down people with pies. And, like, there's a tinge of, like, is there something darker here going on? Because all the opening stuff is, like, oh, go into, like, third-person mode to shoot arrows at birds to hunt the meat. And then when you hunters or like warriors from the castle will come and harass her. And then when she, you know, defeats them, she gets a pie that they were carrying. And I'm just like, is she like ripping out their organs or something? And then, no, it's just that the game is very like cheeky and like all the they're carrying pies as rations. There's nothing actually dark going on. But then there's like a Pokemon-ish mechanic where you can capture animals and it's just done via a brainwashing spell. Like they just straight up say that. And it's just like beat enemies until they're at like 130% health. And then if the brainwashing spell like finishes them off, they just join your party. And it's fabulous. It's just kind of funny.
It's a little, you know, like maybe what's the difference between that and, you know, capturing monsters in balls and forcing them to live in there all the time, unless you want them to do your bidding.
Ooh, really hot take there, Polly. Pokemon sinister.
So yeah, the first chapter, you're just going around like towards the start of a bunch of different dungeons, and then you know some story beats will happen, and then you can kind of progress deeper into each dungeon path if you want, optionally, but. It's kind of interesting because it's like everything, all the systems in this game are different from how I'm used to JRPGs acting because you don't level up. There's like a full like meter over the course of the game that does give you stat bonuses, but it's like five over the entire course of the game. Most leveling is either done via a training mini games or like just straight up items that give you stats. And so early on, it's a lot of training, and I was like obsessing over the math in the training because there's like strength, defense, agility, magic, MP, HP, all these different stats on each training regimen. And I'm like, AGI, agility is only raised on these two. Defense is only raised on one of them. So like those are the priority stats. Oh, but I really want to go the mage path. And then the mage paths are like four different variations of raises MP, raises INT, and I'm just like, one of these is just clearly worse than the others. I don't understand. Where it's like, I don't know, I like was parsing the numbers, like, if you take this one five times, you'll get this, and if you take this one five times, you'll just be down 15 INT, and like, why is it like that?
That's, yeah.
But eventually, and then early on, I find these enemies that drop a crafting item that will raise your defense, and I'm just like, can I just farm this forever? And the answer is yes. So I never actually had to do the defense training. I just every once in a while would just go to this island, kill these three blue crabs, craft some more stuff. And it's just, there's a weird loop to it. And I was also playing on the highest difficulty, and I don't think that was available at launch because everyone was like, hey, don't worry about it. This game's piss easy. It was not super easy for me. Like chapter one was definitely like, because it's, you know, most RPGs you have parties, and this you do have your, you know, brainwashed animal pets, but they don't have HP. Everything targets you no matter what. And you're very squishy at the start. And a lot of the fights over the course of the game feel designed that enemy attacks will just get stronger as the fight goes on. So you're really encouraged to end things as quickly as possible. So how you build your character is definitely, you can't just go full like defensive mode and just kind of will them down, because eventually I had a boss towards the end, just I had like 3000 HP, and I'm like, well, there's no way they're gonna hit me for 3000 HP in one turn because my barrier wasn't up, and then they hit for like 3300. I'm like, fuck. And that was after like starting that chapter with 2000 HP and grinding up to 3000 just in absolute case, like, and then it still happened where I got one-shotted at the end of a fight. So chapter one, very loose story, like finding pies, you know, cute witch stuff. And then from chapter two on, it just becomes like a very involved JRPG, like tons of story, tons of characters, not a whole lot of dungeons. Like a lot of the dungeons are further extensions of the ones you find in chapter one. And I just had a really good time with it though, because it was just a good story, good characters. I'm just not sure how to describe it. Like, it's a very interesting game because it does kind of its own thing systems wise. I was really pleased with the story and characters, and there's one arc that made me cry a bunch. And then one character I do think got caught done a little dirty, which was unfortunate, but it's juggling a lot of things, because what I learned afterwards is that Witchspring 2 is like the same setting as the first game, but it's told from a different character's perspective. And the original game, the original Witchspring 1, was like way more simulation focused, where you have 100 days.
Yes, it was like, very like very minimal Atelier like.
Yeah. Basically. And there's like 10 endings or something. So it's like defeat the Pope or don't.
Or don't.
Yeah.
That's like the tagline is like, do all this cool stuff or don't, or just stay in the opening forest for 100 days. So I think John said he got like the did nothing ending or a bad ending, basically.
Yeah.
I think only two of the endings actually go to the post game in that one. And then Witchspring 2 and then is basically the same story from a different character's perspective, but immediately way more linear and dropping the time crunch stuff.
And interesting.
I assume Witchspring 3 and 4 are just even more like standardized JRPGs.
Very much in the way the Atelier games kind of weaned off of that time system a bit.
Especially in like
the Ryza game. The Ryza games just didn't have it at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a really good time with Witchspring R. This year, this game came out in 2023 originally, and this year they added like the post-game epilogue DLC for free. So there's like a couple more hours of like walking around the world and talking to everybody, and I think it did a good job having like resolving some plot lines that were kind of left dangling by the main game's ending. Yeah, the main game's ending, though, it did go really hard, and I think that's going to be a theme in this episode, is I like it when games just go really big and over the top in ways you just don't expect coming.
Do you?
Excellent.
Yeah, I think that's kind of my thing, really.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Yeah, I like that.
It was kind of funny because the last dungeon in this, instead of doing the Trails thing of, like, the big tower with, you know, five floors and you fight one villain on each floor at the end, it kind of does that. But those are the only fights. Like, there's no, like, kind of filler fights in dungeoning. It's just like, okay, five bosses in a row, let's go. Like, when I killed the last boss, I wasn't even sure if I was done because the cinematics, like, kept going so hard. I'm just like, what is happening in this game? Like, gods are coming down. There's fights between dragons.
This game always seems so frilly and nice and pleasant. And then it's just, it sounds like something I might need to have a further inspection of at some point.
Well, I mean, Witchspring 3 made me cry. It got me there.
I hope
it was jank as hell, but it got me there.
I wonder if they'll ever do a, because I don't think they could do remake Witchspring 2, given that it's like those characters are in this one. Because I could tell, like, oh, there's another witch character. Oh, she has a boyfriend who is, like, barely developed in this game. So it feels like that's pulling from some lore I don't know. So then when I read about Witchspring 2, I'm like, oh, it literally is. Okay.
Interesting.
So, yeah, in Witchspring 2, you play as Luna, who shows up at, like, practically the 11th hour in this game.
Oh, nice.
Like, you think you're going to get to know her the whole time, and then she's just off doing her own thing for 80% of the game. Like, I see. There's a whole other game over there. Yeah, that's crazy. Maybe they'll remake Witchspring 3. Maybe they'll go out of business. I don't know. Oh, yeah, when you beat the game, the credits are, like, directed by one name, art by one name, story by this one same person. Oh. It's like, it's super got that solo dev energy.
Hell yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Even though, obviously, like, the art and music stuff, like, there's more names in the credits, but, like, the first five roles are all the same person. I thought, oh, that's so cute.
Loved it. Like, we love to see it.
Just wanting to make the definitive version of their original story.
Oh, this is so cool. I'm so happy.
Yeah. It was a really cool journey. And then the other game I played, Jesus, I hate that I have to look at my own backlog. Oh, right. So earlier in the year, I played Ace Attorney Investigations.
Yay! That. Okay, so this is the one where Ace Attorney 2, Investigations 2, is like the one that people say is hot shit.
Yeah.
So, but the original came out on the DS in America, or like the West, in 2009 or so. And then the sequel never got localized.
Nope.
That's the big thing here.
That's interesting.
It's very funny that, like, there was so much clamor for that second game, and Capcom just never even looked at it.
Apparently, there was a fan translation. I have no idea when that was.
That came out in, like, 2011 or 12, I think. But, yeah, I downloaded that at some point to my Cyclo DS.
Cool. So, yeah, maybe, and also maybe that cut off any further interest in actually localizing it.
Yeah, I mean, that would.
Plus, you know, the 3DS was out at that point and bombing in 2011, but... But yeah, the word is on the street has always been like, oh, this is the best one, you know, one of the best Ace Attorney games. It's tragic that they only localized one and not two.
Yeah.
So I talked about one in, like, my experience with the first game in March or so, and just said how, boy, that game just put me to sleep the whole time. Just like, oh, it just drags on. I just didn't find it interesting. So I played two, and oh my God, what a turnaround. It's so much better.
The turns table. It
genuinely is.
Christ. It's a real turnabout.
The legendary turnabout. Because right from the first case, I'm like, oh, they twisted this in a way that I didn't expect. And, like, was already more intrigued and interested in where the story was going, and then it just keeps escalating from there. Like, the second case is good, maybe a bit crazy with, like, shenanigans, like, oh, the body was moved this way. I'm going, okay, like, I thought I was at the end, I thought we'd found the culprit, and then there was, like, a whole nother day left. I'm just like, boy, they keep going, and then they keep subverting your expectations. The third case is super long. It might be the longest one because it's also a flashback where you get to play as Edgeworth's dad for a bit, and you get to go through the final case he worked on.
Oh, nifty.
And you're up against Von Karma.
Oh, wow. Bringing the boy back.
They bring him back. They tie into the, you know, how that first game went in places. So then finally, as Edgeworth in the present, you get to solve that last case that your dad left hanging. And that's, like, super satisfying. And then cases 4 and 5, of course, also go very hard. And the fifth case especially is, like, when you realize that all of this is connected. All five cases in this game are deeply interconnected. It's fucking crazy. Yeah.
God, that feels so good.
So yeah, it's just a really, really strong visual novel. The gameplay of these games is nothing really to write home about at this point. I probably think it's a little easier than the first one. I didn't feel like I really got stuck on anything that much. They do add a new minigame from the first one, and it's so funny because it just feels like an Ouroboros of, like, oh, this reminds me of so-and-so, because it's kind of it's called mind chess, and, like, it's very similar to the Cyclops of Ace Attorney, except you don't have to actually have evidence. You're just trying to trick the opponent into saying something, like, that they don't mean to reveal.
Yeah, you're trying to get them to implicate themselves.
Yeah. So it's just on via dialogue choices, and it's just incredibly similar to a minigame in 100 Line, where you're also doing a persuasion thing. So both of them are just making me go, oh, this is like a Danganronpa minigame. And I'm sure Danganronpa was probably actually inspired by, you know, Ace Attorney was doing. So it's just funny feeling like a full circle. Like,
seeing that whole human centipede happen.
Yeah, beautiful way to put it.
Of course.
Yeah, so I've got two more contenders for Game of the Year, and I'm going, uh-oh.
Oh, man.
How many spots do I have? 15 sounds good. 15, I should be able to fit everything I want on here.
It's always painful when you got to break out the knife and start making those cuts.
Oh, geez.
That's funny.
How many like, multiple game entries can I put on a single?
we've really pushed the limit there.
I've pushed. Lately. I mean, I put 4 Cold Steel games on a tier once.
That was pretty indulgent. Really, it's pretty indulgent, and Game of the Year is always very lax, I think.
Yeah,
you know, so long as you're not just like, oh, you know, Ace Attorney Investigations and Me Side. Yeah, I'm putting these at number 7.
100 Line in this. You know, they're basically the same thing.
Sure.
Nah, I won't do that, but There's going to be some honorable mentions this year for sure.
Good. Excellent.
And then I played one more thing, but we're going to save that for later.
Intriguing. There's a guy in Super Punch Out that does that.
I can't remember who it is. Is it Bob Charlie? He just goes while dancing around the ring and like
I haven't played Super Punch Out, so I have no idea.
Playing with his nipples and he goes I don't know. Super Punch Out's pretty cool. I think I still prefer the original though.
Yeah, I like the Wii one.
The Wii one's really good. The Wii one is unreasonably good.
Yeah, it really is.
I really ought to play those.
Mm-hmm.
I played the NES game, of course, but.
Yeah.
Mostly, but I haven't gotten to the other ones yet.
Cool.
So, John.
Yeah.
Fred, you've been playing some games, plural.
Video games. Guess who's in short form era? Oh, shit. If I wasn't a lazy fuck, I would have put some big old reverb behind that. Form era.
No more long games. No more TV, no more anything. We here's what I've done in October. I played Excise, the really good freeware game.
Oh, hell yeah, that game's very good.
Nice.
Uh-huh. I had a really good time with that. I read like 20 short stories. Mm-hmm. Just was like, I'm interested in this form. I like writing it. I like digging into it. Mm-hmm. And I just through a ton of them just from like the last 100 years, 150 years of short stories. I just read a bunch of them. It was really satisfying. And then I played a little Steam game. It's called Callback. This is from the creator of Alekhead, I think, Numa Takahashi.
Okay. I know who you're talking about.
Uh-huh. I really, really liked it. It's like, so this is for the first time in my life, I used the terminology Metroid Brain. Yeah. Cause it actually made sense to me. It's an awful, awful terminology.
Boo this man. If you see him in chat, fucking boo him. Uh-huh.
So it's and it's Nama Takahashi and with an umlaut.
Yeah.
Umlaut? The two dots over the O.
So it looks like a little worm.
It looks like the little caterpillar that is also the head of the game. And the caterpillar, its two body segments are also bombs that you can place. And then they can ascend you vertically and you can carry them places. Yeah. And it's just a little mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole game is just teaching you different nuances of the mechanic. And every section starts with the way to move forward. And then the way to move forward being blocked by a completely incomprehensible puzzle,
mm-hmm.
and then a different side path. And then by the end of the side path, you figured out what
you need to do to progress, actually.
What verb you already had to get to progress. It's so cool. Like there's a little tutorial where you don't have all three segments. But once you have the three segments, there's no more upgrades, no more collectibles. It is just, you're learning how the game works, and that's the entire mode of progression.
Smart boy mode turn on.
Mm-hmm, it's very cute and not that hard. It's just like pleasantly demanding in the sense of like, I get these nice little aha moments. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any puzzle I was stuck on for more than like 5 to 10 minutes. I think I cleared the whole thing in like an hour and a half.
Oh, wow.
The
aha moment in a puzzle game when you're not frustrated, but you just kind of like a game that can kind of dial into that without having to like rake you over the coals is a real cool idea. I like the idea of pleasant.
There's like 5 or 6 good aha moments in this game. There's like 5 or 6 real good aha moments. And for an hour and a half, that's crazy.
Yeah, like
that's so cool. Yeah. I was really impressed with this. And it kind of got me thinking like, man, maybe these Steam indies, maybe they know a thing or two.
They know what they're doing.
Maybe not most of them.
Most of them, no. They really don't. But yeah, maybe some of them out there, they got a clue.
Yeah, you know, there's all the hey, what if we do 100,000 Vampire Survivors likes about making upgrading all your characters?
This thing is popular right now. Let's jump on that.
This little dopamine slot machine is popular. Let's replicate it in 100,000 ways. Ooh, Hades was people liked Hades. Let's make a million of those.
Yeah.
Look, there's a lot of reasons to be cynical about the commercial indie scene. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of trend chasing. There's a lot of devs that make like mortgage their house on 1 7-year project, and then it's just okay because nobody knows what they're doing when they set out to make a creative thing for the first time, mm-hmm. and it's very hard mm-hmm. to get it right on your first mm-hmm. try. And then they quit forever because that's a horrible way to go about things.
That is a horrible feeling. That's like, you know, obviously terrible mm-hmm. that somebody put themselves into debt for a project like that. And it's like the passion is there, but you kind of needed to add a little bit of the know-how.
Uh-huh. But you never hear those stories. You just hear about the Stardew Valley guy doing it and working out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even then, Stardew Valley guy hasn't made another game. Mm-mm.
He's working on one. I mean, I think they'd update Stardew Valley still.
Yeah, Stardew Valley is still getting updates, I'm pretty sure. It is
still isn't another game.
It is one of the most regularly streamed games I see on Twitch of people just finding it or just having been playing it for years, and it's just the comfort food video game. But yeah, not made anything new.
Good for them. Not my thing.
I'm just saying that's like the literal 1 out of 1 million odds.
Yeah, it's 1 out of 1 million odds, and the output is still undesirable for me as a player. Mm. It's still something I'm not interested in, and that's fine. Not everything needs to be for me, but it's contributed to me just kind of like I used to play so many, like in 2012, 2013, mm-hmm. I was like super plugged in with the rest of y'all. I was playing fucking The Swapper and Mark of the Ninja and Bastion and all these fucking games. And if I looked at my numbers, because I eventually made a spreadsheet, and I just had a massive drop off in the 2020s where I played like one 2023 indie and Western indie and two 2024 Western indies. Mm-hmm. And then like 12 in 2012 and 14 in 2013 Western paid indies. Like that's the subset I'm looking at, the giant bomb top 10 date when they're not giving it to some AAA junk. And so it's like, but there's a lot of little games. A lot of games like ooh.
Yeah, little, cute little tiny little things.
Cute little tiny little games. And I played 15 of them in a row.
Oh! I thought I was going to have a hard time picking 10 games for Game of the Year.
Uh-huh. You had to cram all these in one entry, John.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no. Not going to cram them in one entry. I don't think that would make sense. But I'll cram them in on this podcast. But basically, like, just running down the list here... after that, I played Storyteller, the Daniel Ben-Mergui game from 2023 that I had played the original Flash version in 2012.
Oh, wow.
And I finally played the version they worked on for 11 years, and it was fine. It was fine. I played Droken's End of Gameplay. I played Leap Year, which I fucking loved. It's Daniel Linson, I think... You played that one. You recommended it to me, I think. That's another game that's kind of like Ooh, where the big thing is just you have all your abilities at the start, and then the whole game is knowledge collecting, figuring out your verbs. Yeah. It's crazy.
And counting number of block tiles.
I know. Oh, my God.
That's like kind of Sylvie Lime-ish.
Yes. Yes. I think that's... In Sylvie Lime, you're collecting, you do collect new verbs, mm-hmm. but it's a similar kind of, I played a lot of puzzle games that I liked. I played this, and this form factor is one, you know, like a bunch of single screens in a grid as you explore mm-hmm. the world and learn more about your character and movement. And the emphasis is on knowledge and puzzle solving and not being too hard. Leap Year was harder than Ooh, but I still... Like in a couple sittings, I was able to like puzzle everything out, and it was really, really satisfying. Loved Leap Year. That's one of my top recs here. So I played Linelith by Patrick Trainer because it was in the a bundle with Ooh and Leap Year. And I didn't see that until after I played Leap Year 2. But he released this 2 months after Patrick's Parabox, which you played, Polly.
Yeah, great game.
Just, you really like?
I just completely missed this one.
Yeah. Well, again, it was 2 months. It's tiny. It's teeny tiny. It's like an hour, hour and a half, probably like 45 minutes for Rhett. And I would describe Linelith as like if The Witness was good. I quite liked it.
Oh yeah, this is absolutely Witnessy.
Oh yeah. I mean, you gotta play it to kind of figure out the whole spectrum of it. It's very, very cute.
The screenshots are like, what the heck is going on?
No, yeah, that's the point. You just sit and watch the video,
you get an idea.
You don't wanna spoil it too much, I think, from footage. I watched played Hollow Floor. That was a cute exploration based kind of Metroid-y game inspired by VVVD and Redder last year. I had a good time with that. That was by Ahmed Khalifa on HIO. Mm-hmm. That's Amidos 2006. I had a fun time with that one. This was a slightly rough one where I think the core game here is really solid. I had a bug that made it so that the down arrow key down and down only worked on my joystick and not on the D-pad. And I was playing the whole game with the D-pad and left and right worked. And the game has a point where it teaches you what the down mechanic does, like silently by just putting you in a situation that's impossible unless you figure it out. So I was stuck in this room for like 15 minutes, like, what's going on? What's going on? Until I finally just DM'd the dev. And it's like, oh, press down.
Press
like,
down, dumbass.
That's not working though. And down didn't work on the keyboard. Cause I even tried like switching to the keyboard. It only worked if I unplugged the joypad, then down on the keyboard would work. So I was just like, it's just like this very lovely little thing, but I just got by this bug in a way that was really painful.
It's a very Polly moment there, I think.
So that was fun. I played Strange Jigsaws after playing the demo a year ago for the IGF.
Oh my God.
It was fucking great. I feel like Strange Jigsaws, you play this one, Rhett, right?
Yeah. I single sessioned it basically.
Yeah, it's real good. I feel like 20 Small Mazes. This is a 20 Small Mazes dev. 20 Small Mazes was fucking great. I think Rhett got me to play that one, and I loved it.
That's weird if I played one of these before you. I know. You recommended me that one.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I think 20 Small Mazes is maybe more about the puzzles, and Strange Jigsaws is a little more about the jokes. There's a lot of...
It's so silly at the end.
Yeah, the Strange Jigsaws, I feel like, it has this big moment halfway through where you, like, collect the three pieces and open up the puzzle verse. And I feel like the strongest puzzles are more gathered in the first half.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I was like... I definitely thought there was going to be a lot more after that. And then in the end, I was like, why are all the harder puzzles in the first half?
Yeah.
It feels weird.
So it feels a little bit like kind of... Mm-hmm. It feels a little bit like awkward in that sense, I think.
Yeah.
Versus 20 Small Mazes, which feels kind of perfect. But the jokes are really good. and all the puzzles and jokes here are good. It's just a little bit structurally odd. I still loved it. I still think this is a banger. I would play 20 Small Mazes and then Strange Jigsaws. I think they complement each other nicely. I played Elec-Ked by Nama Takahashi. You also had played this one before me, right?
Yeah. And I described it as, oh, if there was one more game in UFO 50.
So I'm kind of realizing that is a form factor that I really appreciate, is like games that feel like they would have been like a top 10 UFO 50 entry. That's like one of my favorite things now.
Yeah. It's a little bit more developed than all those games. Like those do tend to be pretty small, but like playing like Vanager and then this was like... Yeah, comparable.
And then, except they stayed within God's Light by releasing it as a standalone thing.
For like $10 by itself.
Good. Fine. Hell yeah.
Give me Magic Garden for $10.
No, I played Elekhead. I played $10 for Elekhead and I felt very good about it. I also played it in one or two sittings. And this one is, I think, about twice as long as Ooh. I think it's beefier. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a little less dense in aha moments and feels a little more like more of a normal game mm-hmm. than Ooh does. I still think it's a really good one. I still had a really good time with it. I think they both go well together, and I would happily play anything else this guy puts out. Mm-hmm. I played one of his itch freeware games in 2018, but I didn't play one of his. I didn't stay plugged in enough to play these games when they came out, though. Yeah. So I don't really get points.
No.
I got really stuck right at the end of Elekhead because I think you have to backtrack to the start.
And oh,
the,
no, yeah, yeah. I got
the signposting was
really
weird.
Hard puzzle.
Yeah.
There's one really hard. I found the thing by accident that I was supposed to do, and then I figured out what the tell was, and I was like, oh, that makes sense. Boy, that was hard. Boy, yeah. I was stuck there for like 30 minutes.
Oh, no.
Here's one that I haven't seen a soul talk about. I played Time Flies by Playables.
Uh-huh.
And this is a dev that's been going around for years, apparently, consistently releasing little games since 2015. There's this one that Cecile recognized it called Kids. Maybe you saw this one. This one has more reviews read, so maybe you saw this.
No, Plug and Play is like, for some reason, a VTuber like staple.
Okay. So this is the norm. Maybe the normies know this one more. So Time Flies is like if Minute was good. But you're a fly and you have a list of tasks you need to do before you die.
I get it. Yeah.
The start of the game, they ask for where you live, and then they say the life expectancy in the United States is 76.3 years, uh-huh. and then you get 76 seconds to complete each level.
That's cool.
It's really fun because this game is just you die over and over trying to figure out each of the tasks on your bucket list, mm-hmm. and then you string a run together where you do all of them in one life.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. and then there's four bucket lists like that in four zones. It's full of really good jokes. It feels nice. The puzzles are cute and simple. I think the big thing is I feel like the jokes are the big thing, is that the environments are really funny. There's funny interactions. There's at least there are multiple jokes about the fly coming out of or going into a butt.
All right.
Of like a mannequin or a dead body.
I'm in.
There's a lot of like
poly bait taken.
It feels like very British. It feels like right. There's some Monty Python DNA to this. Yeah. And I love the jokes. And then there's like this, like the stuff with the life expectancy. There's just enough of a little bit of like flavor, of like poetic flavor,
sure.
that I finished it and I kind of went like, and the ending is just like this little cute note that goes just that little bit harder than you'd expect for such a simple looking game, mm-hmm. that I had a moment of like, I felt something from that. Oh. I felt something from this dopey little game. So I think this one's a banger. I feel really good about Time Flies. And God, they just keep fucking coming.
And they don't stop coming, and they don't stop coming, and they don't stop coming. Like Rhett.
Yep.
Accurate.
I played Roger.
And Roger.
This one's really funny because I looked at the video and...
Oh, this one.
Oh, right.
And I was just like, this looks like John Poison.
Poison.
But I got it for free, and I was just like, well, it's only an hour long, apparently. Let's give it a shot. Let's be a hater.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's be a fucking hater. Because it looks like Florence. I hated Florence. Florence is that game by, I think, Union Busting Vets. From Notorious Union Busting, iPhone developer Us2.
Yeah.
Worked on Florence. And it's the fucking greeting card ass Hallmark movie ass
God
bullshit. You
look at the visuals, man.
Fucking hate Florence. And then the big thing is that all of the story scenes are presented with like these little WarioWare mini games that symbolize like the conversations you're having on your first date. And to me, I'm like, okay, so this is like dysphoria language, DYS for IA blown up into a full commercial game.
Yeah.
Without any of that game's bite. Instead just directed in the most like lame possible package. So I hated Florence because I really didn't like how that resolved. I thought it was extremely twee. And Roger, I had a complicated response to, because I think you can I think it's pretty. I like the art and music. The story is very big feelings melodrama. It is banging you over the head. Mm-hmm. And I think that and the subject matter is so sensitive that I can see, I looked through a bunch of reviews of this one, like on Backlogged and whatnot, and a lot of people had like very negative reactions to the thematic material. It's very earnest. There's a little bit of Christian stuff in it from the dev. And it makes sense to me to be irked by it. It's this very sincere, very one note story. I cried my fucking eyes out at it.
That's all it takes.
If it's, yeah, I did. Florence didn't.
Game.
Florence tried to get me, and it failed. Mm-hmm. It tried to be like manipulative one-note melodrama, and it failed at being that. This tried to be manipulative, over-earnest melodrama, and it succeeded. So I feel like that you get points for that. My big negative is I think the WarioWare art game is a dead end. I don't think this is a good language.
Yeah.
Because when it's an hour long, half of the mini games are just stupid. There's like a stealth mini game. There's mini games where you're aligning picture frames, where you're doing certain things, and they kind of line up with what's happening in the story, but it's very labored. And then half of them do work. And a couple of them like really work, are like really good metaphors, but the text and audio and story are already so loud that when you also have a gameplay metaphor hitting you over the head,
it starts to feel a little preachy.
It feels preachy. It feels even more melodramatic in one note. And it feels like I'm having keys jangling in my face. So it's like, hey, look, there's gameplay. You don't want to just read a book, right? Here's gameplay. And I don't need that.
Yeah.
I'll just read a Kinetic VN.
Give me the Kinetic VN version of that.
Yeah, it's literally like this is like normie seabed.
Oh, wow. That's rough, man.
That's kind of the
just take all vibe the heart and soul out of seabed, basically.
Again, it's earnest. I don't feel comfortable putting in the same box that I put Florence.
Sure.
I think this was sincerely made. And I think that it succeeds on some fronts. I don't really like it. I don't really recommend it. And I don't like this language. I dislike it more for how it goes about telling its dopey story than I do for the dopey story itself. And I think that's where I've differed from almost everybody I've seen. Because whenever I've seen criticisms of the game, it is about the narrative, and I feel like more criticism could be afforded to the Florence language. Because
yeah,
I don't think this is a good train track to be on. I think we should get off it. I don't think we should be respecting it. I don't like it. Dysphoria, I like Dysphoria. Dysphoria was great. It was 5 minutes long.
Yeah,
you don't have time to get tired of it. If you want to tell a game where the metaphor of game language is used to communicate a story, then pull back on the explicit narrative.
Yeah, yeah.
Let the game be more poetic.
Tell the story.
Yeah, it's when you're hammering me on every front. I feel like it's just too much.
Yeah.
So that's my Aaron Rodgers thing.
Oh, but you did cry a bunch.
I did cry a bunch, though.
Yeah.
That's what's getting me to
that's
like,
always
wish
the golden instead. Ticket. That's always the golden ticket.
Yep.
I look for two things in a game, going big and crying, and that's so.
I think you'd vibe with it, Rat. I think you'd have a good time. I think Polly, I don't think this would work for you. Mm. Those are my reads. Mm. Hello, friends.
Hello.
You have to check out this game. It's the most innovative shooter I've played in years.
Oh, jeez.
I played Super Hot.
Oh, hell
unbelievable.
Yeah. Wow. This is a sniper shot out of nowhere.
Well, I played the Jam version in like 2013 or 2012. I played that all the way back
you
there.
You played it before it was cool. We get it, John. You've said it 20 times already.
I played Storyteller before it was cool. I played Super Hot before it was cool. Storyteller never really became cool, but Super Hot did. And the Jam version was really good. And the commercial version rips too. I think there's something to be said that the core idea here is so simple building it out into a full commercial thing doesn't actually add that much versus just playing the Jam game. Maybe I feel like I almost felt like I had those epiphany moments the first time I played the Jam version, and then playing this version was like, oh yeah, this is nice to come back to. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel too compelled to keep going, but the basic idea here is amazing. If you don't know, it's a first person shooter where time moves only when you move. One shot from anything kills you. So the levels are just like placing you in these impossible situations where you have to chess move, maneuver your way around enemies. And it feels fucking great. It's so cool.
So fun. I love the replays when you finish a level and you see what you did sped up to real time. It looks so badass.
Uh-huh. It fucking rules. So like it, I think the story's cute.
It's cute. Like, it goes in a direction. Like, I fully expected that's what that game was going to do when I sat down to play it. I wasn't playing it for the narrative. They have some fun flourishes with it. They play with it with the gameplay in a number of unique and fun ways. But yeah, that game is just, it is a game feel extravaganza.
Mm-hmm. The story is cute and it stays out of the way.
Yeah, it largely does. Yeah.
And the play feels amazing. Oh, so I'm, yeah. This is one, like, I don't know if I'm going to get, like, turbo into it like a lot of people, but I'm glad I finally went back and played the full fleshed out version.
Yeah.
Because I'd been meaning to for ages. Mm-hmm. Also, been meaning to play It'll Do for ages.
Oh, my God. Oh, going even further
It'll
back.
Do. It'll Do.
Oh, 2013.
Like, yeah. A game with puzzles that even I played a lot and was just like, this is amazing.
That's a banger. So say it with me, folks. I played Daniel Raybar's freeware games before this, but I never got around to playing this one.
Dev.
Yeah. Well, it's not just Raymar. Like, I wish I had his name. But the credits make it clear there's like a main duo here and then a lot of other folks at Ludosity. I think It'll Do is a game that's where the framing and scope is very, very humble. And then as you approach the end, the full scope of what the game is doing as a piece of design unfolds. And it's like, oh,
it is a big aha moment.
Oh, this rules. Oh, this is so cool.
Yep.
Now the scope of really enjoying that, I think, would require playing through the game several times. I'm not really in the mode for that right now. Yeah. I'm in one and done mode. This is a cool thing. It's block pushing puzzles and verbs for block pushing puzzles. And the way that it plays out, my first read was like, I was in the pro room and struggling really hard. Like, okay, this is a whole 5-hour Zelda game to prep you for one really hard 12-room puzzle script. And it is that. It's also crazy because of the twist with the structure twist with what you need to get through the game. I didn't realize it's a Barbuda like.
When you said that, I lost my shit.
I was like, what? And then, oh, right. Because I didn't engage with the other paths in that game once I beat it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was just like, oh, yeah, I found the one path to get to the last boss.
Nope. And I feel like there's a way where that can diminish the first feeling of getting through the game a little bit. Because there's all these seemingly like red herring things that don't matter to your progression. Right. And that's true in Barbuda. I feel it's true in Itildo. So you're making a little bit of a sacrifice there. But in return, you just get this like feast of design where you can play the game in a bunch of different ways. And the like all the puzzles go from being like one puzzle to being five puzzles. That's fucking nuts. That's so cool.
I think the fact that like only 5% of players had those other achievements for beating the game is why they were like, oh, we're going to change it up for the second one.
It's not, I remember you explaining this like 10 years ago and why you liked it'll do one more. But I'd completely forgotten the specifics of that. So getting those big aha moments was really nice. I feel like this is a game where the writing and design is cute. The writing and narrative stuff is cute. The real feast here is in that structure, in how they do that final castle and how it all ties together. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. That's so cool. How do you have 1-2 floor dungeon that's that dense with game design? Go ahead, Polly.
No, I'm just agreeing with you. Like that game, like I that is a game that I've always kind of looked back at and just been like, man, that's such a John thing. I feel like he would really like this.
I'm really impressed. I want to go back eventually. I want to finish the pro levels because the puzzles in this game get really hard.
They get real mean.
They get really hard. Figuring out the verb things is crazy. The interactions between the portal gun and the ice gun and whatnot.
That shit gets insane.
I played the cherry orchard.
Oh wow.
My friend of the pod.
Wow.
Yeah.
Manuela Shabania.
I had a cute time with this one. I read several Chekhov stories during the short story binge. I like Chekhov. I took a Russian lit class in college, so I get back to that world, makes me happy. I want to get more familiar with the base play here because I wasn't, and this is kind of a funny way to interact with it for the first time. I don't know if all the direction 100% landed for me, but the color palettes and there's a handful of choices. Creative choices that really, really work for me. So I feel like this one was a little mixed for me, but it's only an hour. It's a cool way to experience it. I feel like the power of the base story still came through.
Yeah, she's been working on the seagull for a while, and I know that like she is kind of in the industry now in terms of working with a lot of big indies and stuff. So I think a lot of her own original works have kind of taken a creative stall. But I played an early version of the seagull and already really love what it's doing, and I'm just excellent. I really want that to come out because I think what they're doing with it is just so cool.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I'd love to see more stuff from them. But again, if they're working full time now doing other stuff, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Cave Idiots by Jake Clover. So Jake Clover made like 60 games on Game Jolt.
And we're going to talk about all of them.
In the 2012s to 2017, 2018, 2019 range. And I knew them from their contribution to Experiment 12. So I played a handful of their things back in the day. And so when I saw them on Blue Sky and they're like, hey, I just released a commercial, Steam game. And I looked at the footage and it looked crazy. It looked like a Jake Clover game. I'll post this one in the chat too, so y'all can see, Cape Hideous. So this is a barely interactive. You walk around and there's no puzzle solving or anything. There's no text. There's no dialogue between the characters. You are just vibing in this setting and going through a handful of interactions. Mm-hmm. And it's like 40 minutes long. I think this one hit me really, really good. Mm. As so basically just like kind of a 40 minute arty short film. Mm-hmm. I just, the direction of it, there's a lot of long shots. There's a lot of contemplative moments. There's a lot of moments where you think something really bad is going to happen. And then it kind of pulls back like, oh no, this is just a day in the life. You feel like you're a member of this crew on this weird Ralph Bakshi pirate ship nightmare. And you're just living your life in this very surreal, strange setting, just going about your day. And I really like the music. I really like the presentation. I really enjoyed it. And unfortunately I wasn't able to complete Arzette, the Jewel of Faramore before the,
podcast. That game is delightful.
I'm very, very delighted. I'm very entranced.
I forgot about that one. I looked it up and I was like, oh, this one, I need to play this eventually.
That was like the first game that I played this year. I started off with a game. I was just smiling ear to ear the whole time playing it. It's just delightful.
It's just pure joy.
Yeah.
It's so nice.
It's so locked into what those CDI games were doing, but it's not just riffing on them in a terribly referential way. It's just taking sort of like what those games are known for and it's kind of the jank. I mean, you can actually play it as if it was like there's a mode where you can just play it as if it were like that it played exactly like those CDI
games.
That's
so funny. Oh, that's really awesome.
Yeah,
there's a mode. Say, I hope it plays better.
It does play better, but there is a mode where you can make it play exactly as you were, because this dev also did the full Windows PC remake of that original game, which is why Arzette exists.
Fucking cool. Oh, so fucking good. Oh yeah, no, I'm entranced. I've still got so many more. There's so many short Steam games. There's so many games that aren't fucking 100-hour roguelike puzzle games. There's just a million like 1 to 2 hour games or 4 to 7 hour games. I think the ones that these are longer, but I'd really hoping to get to them on this binge. I really want to play Consume Me and I really want to play 1000 Resist. Mm-hmm. I've been kind of holding off because I have the short ones that I'm just chewing through and I'm having such a good time with that. Mm-hmm. But I'd really like to kind of culminate the binge with those two because they seem like absolute turbo bangers. So that's 15. That's what happens when you play 15 Steam games.
That happens. Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, it's been a month since we last podcasted. So that's like, you know, that's like a new game every 2 days.
15 games for John, 3 for me, feeling like super accomplished because 2 of them were like
50 hours. And 1 for me.
Well, guess what? And also, Rhett, wait. I finished Ooh on the 16th. This has been 10 days.
This has been a little... Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well, we took 2 days off from all of the family.
Right.
Basically, family left, and we both took 2 more days off of work after the wedding. Mm-hmm. And we both were just like completely zonked out because we've been entertaining and talking to people for 4 straight days.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, like, those 2 days, I played like 7 or 8 games. and then I've just been coming home each day and playing games. And yesterday, I finished It'll Do Cherry Orchard Cape Hideous. So that's how it happened in the last 10 days is we took 2 days off just to decompress and I did it playing little games. So feels good. Feels like getting reconnecting to something that I kind of had stepped away from for a long time. Mm-hmm. Polly,
what's up?
What have you been up to?
I didn't play 15 games. So I feel like we're closing the show with a little bit of a letdown, so get ready for a real low energy segment. You know, I can't live up to what you got. Banger, 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 15 bangers. I was like, well,
not 15 bangers, maybe about half and half.
Maybe, all right. So, y'all remember Japanese cartoons? Remember how fun those were? Like, yeah. In January, my love of Japanese cartoons was basically took out behind the shed and shot in the head.
Fucking... the Ave Mujica hate is never going to be not funny to
this
me.
This has reached the level of My Hime's ending level.
God,
of,
so like, fucking
this
funny.
Is now infamous. This is now a thing that is ingrained in my DNA, that my absolute just disgust and anger of what they did with Ave Mujica, because that was a show that had so much potential and so many good ideas. And then a new director came in and said, but I have a hard-on for this one girl nobody cares about, so I'm going to make it all about her. And then the whole rest of the show just gets completely derailed by it. And yeah, angry about that. I'm going to be angry about that for a very long time.
Forever.
But I am not angry about the next show that I'm going to talk about, because this is a show that consistently made me smile, made me feel refreshed, made me feel wonderful. I am talking about City, the animation.
Your concentrated joy.
Oh man, when previews,
oh my god,
for this show started, like, I was immediately brought in. The look is immediately charming. It's stylized in this perfect way. Like, it captures what the manga looks like perfectly, like, in a way that, like, in a way that only KyoAni can, I think. Like,
if anybody's
gonna knock this out of the park, it's KyoAni, and like that the characters were cute. It seemed completely chaotic and absurd, and I was unfamiliar with Araui Keiichi's work, Nichijou, which I know.
Everyone else was like, Nichijou's successor.
Yeah, like,
I love Nichijou. Like, we watched it last year, and we loved Nichijou.
I'd seen some of it. I've seen characters around. I know John's in love with Nano. But
oh my god,
she's so
my
sweet.
My love, my light.
She's so sweet. But that's all I knew about it. But me and Ghosty are currently in the middle of watching Nichijou, so probably talk about that next time. If
excellent.
Yeah. Nice. So
have you gotten to the elevator sketch?
Don't think so.
Okay. All right. That's it. That's all I wanted to say.
So City is weird, because I think that, like, while Nichijou kind of feels like a sketch comedy show where there's like a through line, I think that, like, City feels like a four coma come to life, but it's a lot more nuanced and layered than that. There's running themes and stories that all play out over the course of the series. And everyone's story kind of ends up on a crash course with everyone else's. And the way this happens is always in some incredibly ridiculous way. It's never confusing, despite the fact that it's juggling a lot of main stories at once. The characters are all just fantastic. Every character, I think that it's fair to say you could boil every character down to a one note joke that, you know, and that might be boring, but the writing just keeps finding new and wild ways to have fun with those characters still being this weird thing that you initially kind of are introduced to them with. There's a level of development and depth that they're somehow able to pull off despite not having to stop and have big emotional tearjerker moments or anything.
I really appreciate that. I think, like, that's really cool.
It's also a show where it's hard to say, oh, that's my favorite character, because you just love them all. Like, everybody's great. Nagamo's great. Nikura, Wako, Eri, Matsumi, Tariwaku. The list goes on, because it's just literally every character in the show, and everybody gets, like, a segment or episodes to shine, and it really is. It's hard to describe the structure of this show, because it just bounces around a lot. It is very much like, here's a vignette, here's a vignette, here's a vignette. It's like Nichijou, but a lot more chaotic, despite the fact that this is a very relaxing and chill show.
Yeah, I was going to say, you think it's more chaotic than Nichijou?
I think chaotic in terms of the way they bounce from scene to scene. I think Nichijou has a relaxed pace, because it's telling longer stories that are kind of playing out, whereas City, to me, felt like it was bouncing back and forth between characters and ideas, like, every 2 minutes or something.
Yeah.
Hence why I think that, like, it kind of feels like a four coma come to life in a way.
I really like that. I think that's really cool.
And I really like the atmosphere of the show where...
Yeah, I was going to say, this one felt more like the vibes.
Yeah, there's a vibe going on here that I can't quite describe.
Yeah, it's really hard to talk about this.
But I keep describing this show as like, it feels like a lazy summer vacation, but it's very event. Like, this is a show that I'm going to, like, literally watch every year during the summer now at one episode a week, because that's how me and Ghosty watched it, is that we were watching it as it came out. And, like, every week it was just like, oh, here's another episode of this thing for me to just turn my worries off for 25 minutes and just enjoy. Yeah, like, it's a show that just always made me feel weirdly refreshed. It always put a big smile on my face, whether it's being, like, weird and funny. And there's some tender moments that they, you know, they get into that, like, there's a story that kind of plays out over the course of the story between two characters. And you get to the end, and it's this big climax in the final episode.
It definitely went big on for the tearjerker at the finale. I was crying a lot in the last episode.
It was so good.
That's really nice.
The episode 5 is one of the craziest animation flexes I think I've ever seen on
TV. I think it was five or six. Yeah, I've never seen something like that in the show. And, like, it's weird because that episode starts off really crazy with the tower.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, yeah, people were right. This one's crazy. And then it just goes for the second half.
I'll just say, like, I won't spoil it, but I'll just say there's, like, 13 stories going on in 25 minutes. And they did something absolutely amazing with it.
So you think that's going to be the peak, but then there's also the last episode.
The last episode gets there, and you're just like, oh, my God, I can't believe they're doing this. Because it's a show that you spend a lot of time laughing at, and it's silly and never taking itself too seriously. But then you're, like you said, you're literally just crying into your keyboard at the end. So good.
Well, the last episode is like two sketches.
It's two sketches, but yeah.
One, and then them cooking till the house burns down.
Yep.
Because when I realized, like, that bit was going to be the whole rest of the series, I'm just like, oh, yep, perfect. Perfect. Yep. 10 out of 10. No notes.
Yep.
Incredible.
Yep. Yeah. This is absolutely, like, spoilers, not going to be an Anime of the Year show this year because I hated anime this year. Unless Rhett wants to do a show by himself.
Oh, boy. I don't think so.
But I
feel I didn't watch enough this year, and I watched way more than you.
Yeah, yeah. Like, this is probably, like, the second or third show I watched this year, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not a lot
Number
of
anime. Number
one. Number one. Easy. Number one with a bullet. City the Animation. And I'm pretty sure Nichijou is going to find its way on there, too, I'm absolutely just loving it.
It's just magical.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good stuff.
So. And what would number three be, like, Turkey?
Death. Probably, yeah. They nailed that.
Just whatever you can do to get Abe Mujica off the list.
Get out of here. Get out of here. All right. So that's Japanese cartoon time. We did it.
All right. Now we're here for the main event, right?
Now we're down to the one video game I played that can't possibly live up to, you know, Rhett playing banger, 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 John playing 15 games. It's like, what can I do to compete with that? All I did was play a silly little VTuber fan game. That's all I did.
You played the banger of the year. You played the important game.
I played a game that this is a lot, so we'll just get into it. So I played.
Sure.
I played Chrono Gear Warden of Time. This is a Hololive fan game starring Oyo Kuroni, and she's the Warden of Time, and she has huge tits.
She has huge tits. There's one part at the end where I was just like, "Come on, guys! You have to be so accurate right now."
Yeah, you kind of like have a moment there. It's like, "Oh, come on!" So this game is by Galaxy Trail, who you may know is the devs behind Freedom Planet games. The first of which I enjoyed quite a bit. The second I never got around to playing.
It's crazy just starting off that it's a Hololive fan game by, like, professional developers.
Yeah.
With actual, like, released popular games.
Yeah.
That's already crazy.
Because a lot of these Hololive indies just kind of come from people that are embedded in the community that have game dev chops, and maybe they hadn't had that level. But this is coming from a very widely known studio. to get an idea of the kind of games Galaxy Trail makes, their biggest influences are definitely, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog.
And Treasure.
And Sega Genesis era Treasure Insanity.
Yeah.
And this game doesn't stray too far from that formula, but it obviously switches things up because this is more of an action platformer. But you still feel the sonicness in the level design, and the game definitely encourages speed running in similar fashion. So
it's interesting. You can go fast, but it's really hard to at times.
It is. Yeah. The levels are very intricately designed, and you've got to kind of like you got to get your thinking cap on if you want to hit those target times. So the action part of the game is pretty simple and straightforward.
Yeah.
Crony just kind of beats stuff up with two swords, meaning she's already a great character. And for most attacks you just like hold the attack button and she'll just perform some two-hit combo or something over and over and over. And you can like schmoove around while she's attacking. It's very
love to schmoove around.
I love a good schmoove.
I don't know if this is sarcasm because I think my biggest knock against this is that you just hold to attack and then just kind of
it's really weird
dance around the enemies and you don't really have contact damage it feels a little off to me.
It doesn't feel perfect as an action game, and that is this game is never going to win any awards for being a fantastic action game. It's very simple.
I would give it an award for being a fantastic action game.
I mean in terms of like games that you think of when you say action game that have like that are mechanically deep in a way that people like to dig into. This game has that, but it's more in the finding your way through levels quickly rather than the combat being, you know, it's satisfying to engage with on a more nuanced level. Crony also has the Cronycopter, where she can spin one of her swords above her head and you fly and float around, and it also functions as an attack. It's very cool.
It's a double jump.
Yeah, it's like, a double jump. It's a double jump.
You do it constantly because you have to get around everywhere.
Yeah. She's also got speed up and slow down powers, but they're not in any way as nuanced.
Not Toho Luna Knights.
No, not it. Yeah. Not in any way.
You
mostly use slow to slow down enemies and projectiles and platforms, or like stop doors from closing after you hit a switch. And you use turbo, the speed up mode does give her a few more extra attacks that kind of come out when you jump. Like she could do like a spinny buzzsaw move that's pretty cool. But it's mostly just she's just going to swing the sword super fast now.
She walks faster.
It's no Toho Luna Knights.
I think some of the puzzles do dip into that, especially towards the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, there are time-related puzzles, for sure.
Yeah, like, there's a really good puzzles built around the speed-up, slow-down mechanic. And I think that this game would be worse without these mechanics. So, like, this game... Yeah.
I mean, the whole concept of her being a time-based character...
Yeah, you gotta have it.
Kind of had to have it.
Yeah, for sure.
And that, you know, they had to make it so, like, when you slow down time, there's a bubble around her, and anything that enters the bubble gets slowed down.
Yeah.
And they had to code every single like moving thing to be affected by the bubble. That seems like it would be a pain in the ass because there's a series of moving platforms. They all have to slow down so that they don't start.
Slow down. It's very funny. You can make moving platforms look kind of silly when you slow them down, and they all get bunched up and shit. It's pretty cool. But the level designs are really satisfying and varied. This is a game that's just always mixing it up or something.
There's so much more variety than I thought there was going to be, because I played like the first level 1-1, and then I go to the second level, or then you go to the hub, which looks kind of similar, and then you go to the second level and it's like a totally different visual theme. I'm going, wait, what? I thought each world was going to be like, here's what this entire world looks like.
No, they get more than one tile set per world.
Oh, God. They get like five sometimes.
Yeah, it's...
Every single level is different. And in the few cases where you do go to a location a second time, it's always like completely different looking.
Yeah.
It's recolored, or like the world tree will go through different seasons.
Yep.
So like the first level will be like spring and summer tile sets, and then the second version is like fall and winter tile sets. They've
done so much work here. There's like so much.
There's so much art.
The amount of art. And that's not even counting like the little up close cutscenes that they get every now and again. Like those look really fantastic. It's just a game with an immaculate presentation. It just looks incredible. It has a great soundtrack. Lots and lots of great tunes.
Dude, the soundtrack is insane because I looked, you collect CDs as like a little unlockable thing. So I looked at the menu and there were like 33 spots and I go, yeah, that sounds right. And then I realized there's a scroll arrow and I scroll down. There's 87 tracks. It's huge.
They make use of all of it too. It is all over the place. This game just, it never looks and sounds the same for very long. It's always changing. There's always something new and interesting to do. Always something interesting to look at. It's really crazy how they put this much variety in this game. It's was not what I was expecting at all.
It is definitely like feeling the difference between a true passion project and like, a licensed game that's being made as cheaply as possible.
Yeah, like it's like, oh, here's our Hololive characters, and they're being cute, and they do some things that are kind of in tune with their character. Whereas, like, this game is just like all freaking out.
Yeah, the licensed game version where it's like, here's five worlds, and they have one boss at the end, and then the game ends.
Just speaking of boss fights.
There's so many,
man. And most of them are super satisfying, despite the fact that the action game element of this game isn't always there the whole time. It doesn't feel great. Yeah. There's so many cool boss fights in this game. I loved pretty much most of them.
When you said, there are so many, the way you said it, I was like, there is one. There's a Polymad one.
There was a Polymad level that had really bad direction. It was the maze. Like, they didn't have... There was a really bad direction there. I think they've gone back and since added some more signs to kind of help point you to where home is.
That one still took me 28 minutes on the timer.
I got 30 minutes on that same level. Was not a fan.
This level... I had a moment where, like, I had 9 collectibles and I died.
Oh!
And I went back to 6.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, let's calm down. This game's been really easy so far. Don't, like, bitch at the first sign of difficulty.
Yeah.
Because I was like, it would be sure nice if the game just put a checkpoint as soon as you get a collectible.
Mm-hmm.
But then, in, like, the last level, you have to get 300 of the music notes.
Yep.
And I died, and when I respawned, I had the same number.
Oh,
I didn't have to go get that last bundle I had already gotten.
Oh, that's cool.
So like the fact that it, like that kind of mechanic was already in the game, love for like having some forgiveness.
Yeah, I didn't die there, so I didn't know that you that you respawned with your music notes. So I wonder
I respawned with 290 when I died.
I wonder if they retroactively like went back.
They've
and
been
fixed
changed
that.
A lot.
Yeah, so this game has had this game launched on September 11th. Never forget.
never forget 1 week after Silksong.
1 week after Silksong, the only indie devs that had the balls to stand their ground. They're the only ones I'm proud of. Get out of here, Demon School. the game has had like 17 major updates since it came out. It's playable though. It's totally playable. Like you will probably run into some weirdness. I got Crony's head stuck in a wall once. Couldn't get her out.
Yeah, I fell through the world twice, and one time it dropped to 3 frames a second.
Yeah.
I went, uh-oh, and I paused it, and it fixed itself. And I was like, okay, weird. There was too much happening on screen at once, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really funny.
That's.
It was like everything was exploding, and I hit a checkpoint, and the game just said, hold on for like 15 seconds.
Let me get my breath.
Okay.
So... what I didn't expect was that I would be as wowed as I am by this game's writing and story. So, like I said earlier, it would have been easy to just make this game's story some kind of like lighthearted Toho. And now we're going to drink tea together and laugh at Reimu being poor. They could have done that. And like Hololive fans would have been totally fine. You know, throw in all your in jokes and, you know, make characters say the thing.
And it definitely is that for the first couple hours, even though I think it's a little bit sharper than that, like what
yeah,
how they're
it's
using
very,
the characters.
I think the writing in this game is very yeah, well never, done.
It's never bad, but it definitely is very pleasant, not much happening yeah. towards the start.
Yeah. But then this game's story begins to go hard in a way that I was just it was like, what are we doing this? Wait, what are you hinting at, game? You are not possibly going to go here. And then the last few hours of the game are just holy shit.
Holy shit.
It's literally like, how did you do this? How did you make this work? This is a VTuber fan game, and you have written a game climax that is on par with, like, and memorable as many other games that I have played with these huge, loud, booming climaxes. And it's just, it's crazy. There's real stakes. There's real drama, genuinely heartfelt moments that just upended every expectation, and the gameplay goes with it. The gameplay comes with it. You're doing crazy shit by the end of this game that is just so wild and fun. It's crazy.
Yes.
I love it so much. That treasure insanity dialed up and up and up and up. And it's just... I can't...
There's a boss fight towards the end where they do something that I was like super happy to see because it's always like a favorite trope when it comes up. And then the game just goes insane for like the remaining 3 hours.
Oh my like, God.
And then it was walking that line of like, this is too much.
Yeah.
I think the last level is a little long because it had a whole last yeah. third where I was like, are you serious? I thought. And then it keeps going for like another 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's a biggie. But, like that level's like 35 minutes.
Yeah. That was another 31 for me. So like it's walking the line of going too far for as long or significantly longer than the games Johnson's playing.
It's like the best edging you've ever had.
I appreciate that comparison, Rhett.
That's what I'm saying, though. That's what's crazy about it. Is like it's 3 hours of going 11 out of 10 loud.
Yeah.
God.
And they nail it. They nail
and
it.
They nail the whole game feels like, because of the kind of weird combat and like all the... There's so many like one-off gimmicks in this.
Oh my God.
Like, throughout the entire thing. This whole thing feels like it is going to burst at the seams and break at any moment. Yep. And it doesn't.
Yeah.
It holds together somehow.
Yep.
I don't know how they did that.
It is amazing. This is a game. Like this game's like just, and I think the thing that's cool is I think that this game is an absolute winner, whether you're a Hololive fan yeah. or not. Like, you may not get all the little window dressing and the references and the winks and the nods, but they also yeah. wrote a story that you're able to get invested with everyone. You're able to laugh at these characters interacting with each other because they're not just spouting memes back and forth. You know, there's a lot.
There's a story here.
There's a good-ass story.
There's a real story here, for real. Like,
that's so cool.
There's definitely a ton of character overload in the first half where yeah. every world will have like its own little story arc and like yeah. five new characters and then they stay in that world and you don't see them again. The main story is like very focused on like three characters or so.
Mm-hmm.
So like you can definitely follow it without knowing any Hololive stuff and you will probably cry at a few parts.
Oh my God. Yeah. There's some real like nod and wink stuff that they're doing there and kind of like tribute to people who aren't there anymore as well that I think are really tasteful. But man, like, I don't even know what to say. This game is kind of just like the biggest surprise I've had this year. Like, I've just, this is not the game that I expected to be talking about like this.
Yeah. We were always like, oh, it's a fun crony Hall of Fan game with by devs with, you know, actual pedigree.
Yeah.
But not like this.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, okay, I played this last night because I wanted to finish it before the podcast and I had no fucking idea what I was about to be walking into. Because I'm sitting there at like 3 a.m. like, oh my God, did that just go as hard as like literally any other game I've ever played?
Yeah.
Like the comparison I was making in my head as it was
wonderful
happening was wonderful 101.
Yeah.
That's like, crazy.
That's...
Like, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, that's... this game just kind of stunned me. Like, I was not ready for it to be what it was. Because you start out playing it, and it's just so unassuming. And then you get to those points in the story where, like, the cracks start showing, where it's like, something's going on here. Where are you guys?
Yeah.
Are you guys going to do this? And then they do it.
They put their whole ass into it.
Yeah.
They don't. No aspect of this is like.
There's nothing half-assed here.
Half-assed, yeah. No half measures.
No half measures.
Oh my God. Like, the second to last boss fight goes so hard. I'm like, well, that was the end, and then it's not.
Nope. The escalation is insane, and it just earns it.
And it earns it somehow.
It struts around with the biggest balls on the planet, just rubbing them in your face like, you didn't think we had it in us, did you? The VTuber game.
That's fucking crazy.
If I was Crony, I would be over the fucking moon.
I need to look and see if she's actually beaten it on stream yet, because she definitely has played it for a couple streams, but then,
you know how
obviously I didn't want to look.
Yeah, because you don't want to spoil it.
I did not want to spoil this ending. I'm so glad I didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
I looked at Bae's latest stream of it, because she's on her third one, and she said, like, oh, two worlds left. And I'm like, oh, buddy, there's a lot more after those two worlds. So she has not beaten it yet.
Yeah, like I said, like, if somebody made a game this good about her, she has to just be over the moon. That's so much dedication.
I would feel so fucking awkward. Like, I don't deserve a game this good.
Yeah, I know.
Like, bro, why am I in the 10 out of 10 banger?
Yeah, like, why?
That's awkward.
How did you write me so well?
That's funny.
Crazy.
Like, this is a game, I go check it out. If it is within your means to do so, and you want to play something that's, like, very treasure inspired, it's got a lot of cuteness to it, it's funny, it's, man, they're, like, the fucking Power Wash Simulator shit, just... Fucking, like, what? Are you for real?
They looked at Crony and said, let's put every aspect of her into this game.
Every aspect of her in this game. That's just, what a game, man. What an absolute. Yeah. This is the kind of surprise that, like, makes gaming feel like, man, maybe we're all right. Maybe things are good. Maybe
this is worth it. This is a good hobby.
Yeah, maybe it's a good hobby. Maybe we don't have to throw it all in the trash quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And any final thoughts on Chrono Gear?
Oh, jeez. There's so much, but like, I think we've covered it. Like,
yeah, I don't want to spoil anything.
My early thoughts of this game got wiped out by
the
Act 3 stuff, basically.
That whole final part of the game. Like, that last...
Like, yeah, I really enjoyed like the opening stuff. Go ahead, sorry.
There's a boss fight where you hit go mode and it's like, oh, you just lock in. You can't put it down. You will go. You just go.
Yeah, so
like, I did not expect things to get this effusive.
It's that good.
Thoughts last night. I was like,
it's that good.
Oh, fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, my biggest nitpick is that, like, Bae's world didn't really have a story arc compared to the others.
It was a little... Yeah. Who did you like the most?
I really like Sana. Is that...
Because
I did that one first, like, of the selectable ones. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's when I realized, like, oh, there's just a lot going on here, more than I already expected, because, like, you play Sana's level, and then you... go onto a spaceship, and then they have a whole story arc of like, oh, we gotta catch these other characters, and then like recovering the warp drive, and it's like each world is its own little story arc that's cute.
Yeah. I loved all the Mume stuff. All that stuff was just a delight. Yeah.
Good.
I think it is super weird that Hollow Life Indonesia has 9 members and 7 of them are in the game.
Yeah.
I'm like, where's Rainey?
Yeah, I'm like, how did she not end up in this game?
Yeah, I understand they can't include everyone. They didn't include anyone who debuted after 2022, which may show how long they've been working on.
Sorry, has Crony been 21. Around that long?
God. 21.
Yeah, she's been
like you just started.
Yeah, 4 years.
Well, that's how the last 5 years has felt.
That's kind of how time goes. Time doesn't make sense anymore, and that is a common theme on this show.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, they just did their 4th year anniversary.
Yep. Yeah.
So I have to assume this game's been in the development for like probably the majority of that.
It's got to be at least 3 years.
I will check at some point. But, God, imagine them fucking sweating when the graduations are happening.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Crony, please, we're making such a banger for you. Don't give up yet.
Don't drop.
This would have been the most awkward release ever.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
What a video game. So, yeah, I guess
that fucking rips. That's so cool.
That is all I got into. And I guess that's going to wrap things here for us once again. So remember, tune in next time or keep an eye on the site, because again, in the first week of November, I will be announcing Game of the Year submissions. So you're definitely going to want to get that. And we want to hear from all of you this year. We want as many as you can stuff down our face. We need it. We love it. We live for the last two podcasts of the year, which we're actually recording as two podcasts this year.
Oh, we've done that before. We thought about doing them on separate weeks this time, but
yeah.
Was so zonked on last time
it was literally just like, all right, we're doing this over 2 days next time. We are not doing this like in an 8-hour marathon, because everybody's dead and miserable by the end.
More like 10-hour by the end.
Last year's was crazy. But yeah, that's going to wrap us up for now. So John, where can people find you?
FarawayTimes.com.
And Rhett.
Probably replaying Chrono Gear.
Yeah, I think I want to get another playthrough in. Such a good game. But yeah, that is going to do it for us, and we will catch you next time. But until then, please do remember that we are the podcast that loves you. We're the only ones that love you.